Hello, I'm Norma Galumbus. Welcome to the Norma Galumbus Lifestyle Podcast, a part of the Saskatchewan Podcast Network. Thank you for listening. Season 4, Episode 10, Keeping It Clean. It is often a handful of visionaries that bring about great change. When I was researching my post, Boil Water, Frontier Midwives, I became interested in medical practices used in the 18 and 1900s. With our healthcare system on shaky ground, it seemed poignant to write about this. I wondered if, as I observed our scrappy quest for hand sanitizer, people were aware of how the practice of sanitization came about, that it was considered a major medical breakthrough. If you became seriously ill in the early 1800s, you might find yourself recouping on a straw mattress under a fur covering with vermin as a common presence. Clean drinking water and sewage disposal were two main threats to the population's health. Sadly, this remains an issue in many underdeveloped parts of the world today. It wasn't uncommon for people with little to no medical training to throw up a shingle claiming to be a doctor, only later to be called a quack. People had no way to access information to verify credentials, so they assumed that doctors functioned in good faith. Thankfully, by the latter part of the century, people started to get a rudimentary grasp of hygiene and beneficial sanitary measures. Conditions improved with time, but often bed sheets were not changed between every patient, or families had to provide blankets, linens, and food. Louis Pasteur, a French chemist and microbiologist, developed his theory of disease in the late 1800s. Joseph Lister, a British surgeon, is considered a pioneer of infection control, the founder of the practice of antiseptic medicine. Listerine was named after him. It was sold initially as a surgical antiseptic and a mouthwash, but was even billed as a good floor cleaner. Lister used Pasteur's principles to develop ways to disinfect wounds. A powder called carbolic acid was used to disinfect these wounds, but the use of this skin-corroding, dangerous if you inhaled it product was discontinued. Surgical gloves and masks were then used to reduce infections instead of focusing on how to treat the infections once they occurred. Anything that involves a change to our way of life spawns conflict. For a long time, doctors disagreed on how infections were spread. In the late 1800s, surgeons in hospitals operated on several patients wearing the same frock coat, used their mouth to hold instruments during operations, and didn't sanitize their hands between patients. Surgical instruments were wiped clean with a towel before the next person's procedure, or doctors carried their precious instruments around in their pockets. Boards of health were established to oversee quarantine and sanitary laws, and public health education was promoted. People resisted these rules, though, and compulsory vaccinations. The concept of a hospital goes back for centuries, although different names were used to describe these facilities. When modern hospitals were initially built, they were subsidized by donations and funding from municipalities, organizations, and churches. So available funding for improvements directly correlated to what was going on in the economy. Hospital wars were often a breeding ground for infection and disease. If you did survive surgery, you had a 50-50 chance of making it out of the hospital alive. Early mortuaries, which were called dead houses, were often repurposed homes with deceased individuals being stored in the basement awaiting examination. I'm not creeped out, you're creeped out. The night watchman must have had nerves of steel. When I picture an autopsy room, I imagine glinting stainless steel and bright lights. Autopsies were originally called dissections. Supposedly, one of the first recorded dissections occurred when Julius Caesar's body was examined after his assassination to determine which of the 23 stab wounds he sustained proved fatal. I guess they must have had a pretty good understanding of anatomy in 44 BC. Sorry, that tidbit goes pretty far back, but I thought it was interesting. This procedure is uncomfortable to talk about, but has produced and provided invaluable information towards medical advancements. Surgeons and nurses in the forces in the early 1900s also suggested a relationship between the spread of disease and infection and sanitization. They were witness to infection rates at an unimaginable level. Medical staff went from patient to patient in field hospitals, doing the best they could without any sanitization between patients. In such conditions, wound treatment often included amputation. Eventually, nurses led the push for clean bedding and hand washing. Medical staff did the best they could at the time with the knowledge and equipment they had. When disinfecting tools and wounds became accepted as a valid medical practice, the spread of infection was significantly reduced. The advent of medications such as sulfur drugs in the 1930s and penicillin in the 1940s helped immensely with the treatment of bacterial infections. The history that led this country to the right to free basic health care was fraught with suffering, but the courage of medical pioneers is inspiring. The surge in Canada's population brought with it a cry for universal health care. During the Great Depression of the 1930s, 60% of Canadians weren't making enough to afford health care. Wages were so low that even people who had jobs continued to live in poverty. Saskatchewan was a pioneer in providing health care to its citizens, and within 10 years, all of Canada received government funding health care using Saskatchewan's plan as a model. Although the spread of infection in hospitals, long-term care homes, and in the general population is still a huge issue, I consider inventors of life-saving medications and medical equipment among my heroes. I try not to be a germaphobe, but when I think of how easily germs can spread, it is unnerving. If I let myself worry about it too much, it becomes an overwhelming drain on my mental energy. I do my best to protect myself and those around me, but I also try and carry on with my life. Visit my lifestyle blog for episode pictures and links to my garden and published works pages, food blog, and gift shop. My website address is in the episode notes.
The Saskatchewan Podcast Network is supported by Kinaxis. Does money spark joy in your life or cause you stress? If you said stress, you're not alone. For 42% of Canadians, their biggest stressor comes from money. At Kinaxis, they care about your financial well-being. Money doesn't have to be stressful, and Kinaxis is here to help. The Kinaxis hashtag MoneyTalk blog provides expert advice, tips, and solutions for all life stages and events. Getting married, buying a house, budgeting, saving, they cover it all and more. And did I mention it's free? Check it out today at kinaxismoneytalk.ca and start feeling confident and stress-free about your money. The Saskatchewan Podcast Network is supported by Direct West. Are you a business owner looking for new avenues to promote your business? Direct West's digital billboards are a great opportunity to highlight a new product, new promotion, or anything else you'd like your customers to know about. You can get local, expert marketing help for your business at directwest.com.